Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website. And I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. I'm getting an ominous sort of feeling about this podcast. Are you getting that feeling? Is there something ominous about this whole topic? Just getting a feeling. This is podcast number 130. I'm recording it on Monday, April 27th, 2009. The PE10 level today is 15. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at incompetech.com, and the title of the selection is One of Them. One of them. They're coming. They're coming. I'll try to explain in a second. The title of the podcast is Jonathan Clements Isn't Yet Able to Apologize. That's bad news for all of us. The working title. Oh, I'm getting that ominous feeling again. They're out there. They're out there. They know where I am. They're coming. The working title was is the upcoming economic depression really necessary? And as I was putting together notes, that's why I chose the creepy monster movie music. I wanted to emphasize that there's all this vibe in the air that, you know, we've already suffered a huge stock crash and stocks have not been providing good returns for 10 years. And, you know, people losing their houses, people losing their jobs, people losing their businesses, people losing their retirement funds. And, you know, it's all sort of out there, this creepiness, and we're talking about a depression if this doesn't work out, and it's you know, creeps us all out. But I changed the title as I was putting together my notes this morning. I changed the title. I thought I envisioned the podcast as sort of a state of the, I don't know, state of Investo world. It's been 7 months since the crash. And early in the crash, I started recording podcasts before the crash, but what I think I started in maybe July, and then the crash was in September, but I had only done a few, and then it started all these things, you know, exploding everywhere with the crash, and so I've been recording them like a madman, trying to keep up with developments. And so early on, I think I gave some thoughts on where we were ultimately headed, but I feel that after 7 months have passed, we have a better sense. And I can give some thoughts on that. And in general, I'm going to take a negative. I think I feel more negative today than I did in the months right after the crash. I actually saw, there have been positive signs, and I saw some very positive signs early on. And today, in December, I would have given a positive take that we could pull out. And today I feel, you know, this may change, of course, in the next 6 months. But my feeling today is the odds are strong that we're going to see another big price crash, which it's hard to argue that won't lead to an economic depression rather than just a recession. But we'll sort that through as I go through. Perhaps that's too pessimistic. Let's hope. So I thought that's a little bit old school. That's the way they would characterize things under the, you know, the conventional investing analysis. They'd say, oh, is there going to be a depression? And they, you know, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal not too long ago, a month or two ago, that where some fellow said, oh, there's a 20, you know, he looks at all these, I don't know what he looked at. I mean, I skimmed it, but they look at all these factors and they say 20% chance of a depression, you know. And, you know, that's fine. I mean, there's no harm done, but the old school way of doing it is to look at all these, you know, is there, you know, what's the unemployment rate and all this jizz jazz. And I think what matters is the emotion. And the emotion is what I'm going to be talking about. The underlying emotion, the emotion is what causes all these things. That certainly unemployment matters, but the emotion is the primary driver. Emotion causes the unemployment, causes the stock crash, causes the depression, causes everything. So that's what we need to be focused on. And under the conventional thinking that we ignore that, or we refer to it as this sort of, you know, silly thing. You know, it's like, oh, you're allowed to talk about that, but it doesn't, you know, it's just sort of color. You add a little color to your piece. But what matters are these economic indicators, you know. So I thought maybe I should take a different tack. And I decided to make the focus Jonathan Clements. He was a personal finance columnist for the Wall Street Journal for many years. A good guy by all accounts, all that I've ever heard. And he certainly seemed like a good guy to me. I wrote to him and he wrote back, and we had a little bit of exchange there. You can find that on the blog. I think it might have been the old blog, Financial Freedom blog, so you might have to look into the archives, but I had some exchanges with Jonathan. And Jonathan, so he's taken a different job. He's not a journalist today, but he's still in the investing field. I think he's giving advice. But he wrote a column. I forget exactly where it appeared, but he wrote a column a week or two ago. And the column title was "I'm Not Apologizing," and I think that's horrible. I think he needs to apologize very, very, very much. I'll state this as strongly as it can be stated because I think it's true. If Jonathan, the one thing I really liked about the column is the theme, because the theme is apologizing. And how long have I been saying, if you've been following my take on all this, I've been saying that we need to hear the three magic words, "I was wrong." I've been saying that for like 3 years now, that's the key. Yeah, I said that before the crash, long before the crash. I was saying John Bogle needs to say, "I was wrong." And Jonathan Clements, of course, is in that same group, passive investing advocate. And so the fact that he's talking about apologizing, that's a very positive sign. That's a very positive sign. Because you don't just randomly write about things. It's not like, you know, when you're writing a column, you just, you know, go through the dictionary and you stick your finger, you know, you open to a certain page and stick your finger with your eyes closed and say, oh, the word that came up is, you know, tarantula, so I'm going to write about tarantulas. You know, something in his mind, something in Jonathan's mind made him think, I should be talking about whether to apologize or not. My guess is that a lot of people have come up to him and said, Jonathan, do you admit you were wrong? Because your advice has caused an economic crash, I mean a stock crash and an economic crisis, and people who listen to your advice have been wiped out. Can you admit you got it wrong, Jonathan? And he doesn't feel that he did. And so he's not able to say that. And so, you know, he thought, I should write a column explaining why. I think he desperately needs to say he was wrong. Or at the very least, if he can't say I was wrong, at the very least, if he could say I'm not sure, that would do it. If he had done either one of those two things, and of course if he says I'm not sure, he could still say I apologize. He could say, I don't think I was wrong, but I apologize for being so sure of myself. I apologize for coming across as if I knew more than I really did. I apologize for acting as if I had more confidence than was really justified. So if he had said that, I'd be recording a different podcast. I'd be recording a podcast. The podcast title I'd be recording, if that had happened, is "The Economic Crisis has Turned Around. We're on the way back. We're on the mend." But the fact that he wrote, "I'm not apologizing," after 7 months, is not encouraging. But, you know, the more time that passes before we hear the three magic words from people like Jonathan, and it's not fair, please understand, to focus only on him. I'm focusing on him because you have to write about something concrete. You have to focus on something. But Jonathan's not the only one that made this mistake, you know, of advocating passive investing. John Bogle's the biggest name, and William Bernstein and Scott Burns, and you can go on and on and on, all these people. you know, good people, smart people, made a mistake, don't want to admit it, can't even acknowledge it to themselves to a considerable extent, and as a result, you know, the bad advice continues to accumulate. We're losing time. The longer these people wait to say I was wrong, or at the very least, I'm not sure, time passes. And the more time passes, the more the economic crisis gets worse and worse and worse. And the closer we get to going off the side of the cliff, the closer we get to turning this recession into a depression. So there's a drama here being played out. And depending on whether you're a glass half full person or a glass half empty person, you can decide, was it a good thing or bad thing that Jonathan wrote the column? If he had written that column in December, I would have taken it as a positive sign. I would have said, hey, we've had a crash, and now Jonathan Clemens, Mr. Passive Investing, is toying with the idea of apologizing. He hasn't said it, but he's at least thinking. It's in his mind. That's positive. So in December, I would have, November, December, October, I would have taken it as a positive, maybe January. But now it's April, late April, and it's a little late in the game to be saying I'm not apologizing. You know, I put up a Today's Passion link every day at my website, and I've lost count of how many articles have pointed out that the efficient market theory is wrong, and that therefore passive investing cannot work, that the conventional investing ideas are a disaster. And it's a little hard for me to believe, Jonathan, you know, I don't spend that much time checking for those articles. I spend, I don't know, maybe an hour every day. So if I've come up with scores of them, it seems to me Jonathan Clemens could have come up with one. And if he came up with one, just one, and it wasn't a crazy person, isn't that enough to say I was a little too sure, I was a little too cocksure of myself in all those years when I was promoting this passive investing stuff? I'm going to read you. This makes the whole case as far as I'm concerned. You believe what you believe, but I'm going to tell you what I believe. This is a link I had up over the weekend, the Today's Passion item for the last weekend. Rob Arnott is, you know, one of the most respected people in the field. He was the editor of the Financial Analyst Journal for, I believe, 4 years, roughly. The most prestigious journal in the field. You know, this guy is the tops of the tops. And this is a sentence out of an article he wrote, I don't know, a week or two ago, sometime last week at investoruniverse.com. It's a sentence. Rob Arnott: the conventional wisdom of modern investing is largely myth and urban legend. The conventional wisdom of modern investing is largely myth and urban legend. The conventional wisdom of modern investing is largely myth and urban legend. Did you hear that, Jonathan Clemens? Myth, urban legend, and you're putting it in the Wall Street Journal. You're telling people to invest their retirement money in it. Should you apologize? You betcha you should apologize. That's, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that's all he needs to have heard. Now, he may not have heard that article before he wrote his. They came out roughly at the same time. But as I say, there have been scores of such articles written by all sorts of smart people. And sooner or later, somebody's got to put the pieces together and say, hey, it looks like this passive investing jazz isn't exactly the cat's pajamas. And it could have been you, Jonathan. You could have did that in that column. Every day you wake up, you have an opportunity to write the column that says, I do apologize. And I urge all of my fellow passive investing advocates to do the same. And you know what I think would have happened? That would have changed the history of investing. That's what I believe. We don't need very much to get this ball rolling. The academic research showing that passive investing cannot work dates back almost 30 years. So we've got lots and lots and lots of material to explore. Once the floodgates are opened, once the taboo is broken, once it becomes acceptable, okay, to point out that the passive investing emperor is wearing no clothes. And if Jonathan Clemens, you know, he has influence, the responsibilities that come with getting a job like writing a column for the Wall Street Journal, If he had said the words, "I apologize," that would have been picked up. It would have been picked up at Bogleheads. It would have been picked up at Vanguard Diehards. Obviously, Index Universe, it would have been picked up where Arnott ran his story. The Wall Street Journal, I presume, would have written about it. New York Times. And that's how a revolution gets started. Rob Arnott, the same fellow I quoted a minute ago, Rob Arnott says, "We are due for a revolution in our understanding of how stock investing works." And he's right. I've studied this in depth. The evidence that Rob Arnott is right is overwhelming. It's a mountain of evidence, and there's nothing on the other side. Nothing but raw emotion. Nothing but "I'm not apologizing." That's it. But somebody has to start the revolution. You know, in the Civil War, wasn't there a guy, John Brown or something, fired the first shot? Went down in the history books. Somebody has to fire the first shot. Now, I fired the first shot years ago. You know, May 13th, 2002, when I said these studies we use to plan our retirements get all the numbers wrong. That was firing the first shot in a way. I don't know what the history books will say about me, but, some people would say I'm a demon for having done that. I don't think so, but whatever they want to say, they'll say. But I think it could be argued that was the first shot, but I don't have the influence. You know, I mean, Jonathan Clements didn't see it when I did that. John Bogle didn't see it, so it didn't start a, you know, the New York Times didn't write about it, and the Wall Street Journal didn't write about it. It was just my little community there at Motley Fool. So, you know, it didn't count in the big picture, you know. But Jonathan Clements is in the major leagues. If Jonathan Clements says this stuff, he doesn't even have, I was going to say, if he says this stuff is gibberish, it would start the change we need to see, and that's true. But he doesn't even need to go that far. I mean, I believe that Jonathan doesn't believe it's gibberish. I don't think he thinks that. I think he's going to think it. I think he's too smart a guy that as this debate continues, he's going to see that it's gibberish. I don't know how many years it's going to take, but I think there's going to come a time when he will say that, but not today. And if he doesn't believe it today, he shouldn't say it today. I'm certainly not saying that he should. He should say what he sincerely believes. But I, Rob Bennett, cannot believe that Jonathan Clements isn't having doubts. I cannot believe that today. I believe that he believes in passive investing. Yeah, I'm convinced of that. There's a lot of evidence. It convinces me. But he has doubts. And there's evidence of that, too. I can't go into all of it, and it doesn't all apply to Jonathan, but every passive investing advocate I've ever spoken to has doubts. I've never found one who is truly confident. Now, I really have never found one. The ones who are most dogmatic have no confidence. They're just frightened little rabbits. They can't even stand to hear it questioned. They just go into panic. But obviously, Jonathan's a step above that, but I wrote to Jonathan. I wrote him about, he had written a column. I wrote him a couple times. I wrote him one time about Bill Scholler's Fire Calc, pointing out the analytical errors in it. And Jonathan was perfectly polite and kind. But what I was trying to do was to get him to he had linked to the calculator. And I was saying he shouldn't do that. The numbers are wrong. He didn't put a column up saying, I no longer recommend that calculator. When you link to it, you're essentially endorsing it. Or you wouldn't link to it. He never took back the endorsement. And that's fine. If he wasn't convinced, of course, that's right. But if he felt that what I was saying made sense, he should have, at a minimum, engaged in a dialogue to find out the other side. And he did not engage in much of a dialogue. And what I said made sense. What I said has been tested in scores of places, and no one's ever found any flaws in the logic or in the data So I know that what I said passed the threshold where somebody in Jonathan Clements' shoes should at a minimum have been engaging in a dialogue to find out the realities. I don't think he wants to know the realities because of the point he makes in his column. He says, I don't have it in front of me, but he said I've written over 1,000 columns, endorsing passive investing. Like, he doesn't want to admit that all those columns are wrong. And I don't say it to hurt his feelings, But if they're wrong, what choice do we have at this point? What are we going to do, spend the rest of our lives pretending that the columns are right? If they're wrong, I don't know what Jonathan's age is. But I don't know. I don't. He's probably... I'm 52. I think Jonathan might be in roughly that. Maybe he's a little younger. He's probably roughly in that area. So let's say he's 50. I don't know. I really don't know. But he wrote his column for a long time, so I don't think he's super young. He's certainly not old. He looks young. Say he's somewhere between 40 and 50. I don't know what he is. Say somewhere between 40 and 50. He's still got a lot of years left. If he's 40 and he's going to write until he's 65, he's got 25 years. He could spend those 25 years. He could put out more than 1,000 columns on the other side. He's got a lot of years left. Is he going to spend the rest of his life not exploring the issues because he doesn't want to admit he was wrong in 1,000 columns? This makes no sense to me. I understand that it's sort of hard after you've written 1,000 columns to admit that you got it wrong, but that's the way the ball bounces. None of us know it all. If we were talking about baseball and you had a manager who followed a particular strategy and people were expecting the team to win the World Series and they finished in last place, they give the guy the boot. Well, what does it take to give the passive investing advocates the boot? When do we ever just conclude that they don't know what they're talking about? I'm going to read it again. The conventional wisdom of modern investing is largely myth and urban legend. Is Rob Arnott not saying the same thing I'm saying? That Jonathan Clements doesn't know what he's talking about? Is he not? And that John Bogle doesn't know what he's talking about? And that Bill Bernstein doesn't know what he's talking about? Now, does Jonathan Clements and Bill Bernstein and John Bogle have every right in the world to state their side? Of course. Do we all, you know, is everybody going to agree with me that Arnott's right? Of course not. But why isn't there a debate going on about who's right? They can't both be right. It can't be that Jonathan Clements has nothing to apologize after advocating passive investing for years and that Rob Arnott is also right in saying the conventional wisdom of modern investing is largely myth and urban legend. They cannot both be right. So we've got the whole U.S. economy riding on who's right. Should we not be trying to figure it out? I have my take. You can go to my website. You can read my take. But I'm not God. I certainly don't know. You know, I believe. I don't know. But I feel that Jonathan Clements is implicitly saying he knows because he's saying I don't apologize. He's saying the strategy's failed. I mean, you know, that's evident. But he has nothing to apologize for. Now, the operation was a complete success. Unfortunately, the patient died. Yeah. That's what we're hearing. That's what we're hearing. The operation was a total complete success. It's a shame that the patient died. If he's not God, and he's not, he should be saying, you know, the column he should be writing is, here are the things I'm worried about. Here are the things that I used to believe in that now I'm not so sure. And, you know, it'd be good if one of them was, I saw something by Rob Arnott the other day, and I happen to know Rob Arnott's as smart as can be, and Rob Arnott thinks that the conventional wisdom of modern investing is largely myth and urban legend. So maybe I came on a little strong in some of those 1,000 columns. Maybe I should have, you know, hedged a little bit. Not been so full of myself. Not been so arrogant. He's a good guy. Everything I've ever heard about Jonathan Clements says good guy. Nothing goes the other way. Except that he can't apologize over this. And I think it's the disease that goes with passive investing. There's a disease associated. I have a chapter in my book, chapter 4, that I'm writing. It's not an investing theory. It's a disease. Because I'm getting a little off track here, so I'm going to pull it back. But the problem with passive investing isn't just that it gets all the numbers wrong, that it causes financial ruin, and that it always causes an economic crisis. Every time in history we've bought into this idea, we've seen an economic crisis in the United States. 4 for 4. But that's not even the worst of it. The worst of it is it encourages, because it's so transparently wrong, the idea that valuations don't affect long-term returns just flat out makes no sense. Because it's so transparently wrong, it makes it impossible for people to acknowledge the error, because if they acknowledge it, they feel that they'd be saying they're dumb. I don't think they're dumb. There's zero evidence they're dumb. But that's, I think, what they feel. They feel, I can't say I'm wrong about that, because that would be saying I'm dumb, and I can't. I can't say I'm dumb and still be an investing expert. It is dumb in that the error in passive investing is transparent. But it's not dumb in that millions have fallen for it. Millions of smart people. So how can it be dumb? The reality is, Rob Bennett says, the reality is, it's emotionally, the problem is emotional. The problem is not intellectual. We all want to believe in fairy tales. And passive investing is a fairy tale. The idea that you don't need to change your stock allocation when prices go to insanely dangerous levels is a fairy tale. And you can study investing from, 100 years, and you're still human, and you're still subject to the draw of fairy tales. So for Clemens to say I was wrong would not mean saying he's dumb. It would just mean saying that he's human. And if he can't admit he's human, we got a big problem on our hands. And I don't mean just him, again. Now, what I want to do, as I said, is sort of to give a state of the art on state of investor world, where we stand in terms of suffering an economic depression. Because my thoughts have changed a bit since the early days. They've changed for the negative, unfortunately. And I just want to, put that out, and hopefully they'll change the other way in the next 6 months. We'll see. But I'll just offer some thoughts. But I want to give another little information bit before I proceed to that, because it's another one that just came up today, and this one I take as a good sign. What I do is I have what I call X-ray vision. X-ray vision means after you reject passive investing. Passive investing is the idea that valuations don't matter. You don't need to change your stock allocation in response to big price changes. Don't need to. Just, stay the course, buy and hold. Stocks for the long run. All that stuff. I reject that. Once you reject that and you say, no. I think what my common sense tells me is right, that stocks are like everything else. There are some prices where they're wonderful, some prices where they're horrible. And you have to look at the price before you buy. That's rational. That's what I call rational investing. Totally different model, leads to totally different places. All your thinking about stock investing will change when you go down that path. And I call it X-ray vision, that every single article I read, I've been doing this for 7 years, so I've covered a lot of ground against my will. I didn't want to do this. I sort of was backed into a corner. I was left no choice. After developing that X-ray vision, everything I see comes to my brain through a rational investing filter rather than a passive investing filter. So I see things and I draw conclusions, or draw, not always conclusions, but I draw impressions, would be a better word. And so I see good things, I see bad things. And what I aim to do in these podcasts is to report what I see as clearly as I can. I don't see it all. Don't ever think I do, please. But I report what I see with the hope that there's some benefit in that, with the hope that what I'm seeing sometimes has some connection to reality, and I might pass along some useful insights to you. Well, something I saw this morning, it's sort of funny what I saw this morning, but actually just before I came up to do the podcast, and I think it's funny, and who knows how it'll turn out, but I like it. I like it, what I saw. There's a blog called Weekonomics.com. And the guy who runs it, his name is Philip. And I don't know, I saw it linked somewhere else, and last week, and I think it was early last week, maybe Monday, and I wrote Philip an email, and I said, "Would you like to run a guest blog on, you know, the problems of the passive investing model?" I said, "I've been writing some guest blogs, different blogs, and trying to get the word out to people, and I'd be happy to write one for you." I guess he probably wrote a comment somewhere. That's usually how I find these. They write a comment at some other blog that I read, and it seems intelligent, and so I say, "Well, maybe you'd be interested in running a guest blog." And he was positive in response. He said yes, and I think he had some language at the blog. I recall him having some language indicating he would like guest blogs. So I felt that he was a good candidate. And he said yes, and I read a little background on him, and I think he's in the banking field. I don't think he gives his real name, but he's in the banking field. He mentioned that, and he sort of, you know, he was a little apologetic about it. He was like, "Oh, you know, I'm in the banking field. I can't criticize the bankers as much as some others are." But so that gave me an idea for a blog entry, and I had been thinking of writing one called "The Bankers Didn't Do This to Us." I don't believe that a lot of people are using the bankers as scapegoats. The bankers, oh, they're so bad, and they cost it all. And I think that's baloney. And so I said I'll write one for you about the bankers. Since you're in that field, I'll write one for you about the bankers. And I thought he was going to love it. And I wrote it. I use different styles. Sometimes I have my serious mask on, and sometimes I have my Joker mask on, and this one was with my Joker mask. It was mostly one-liners, but with a point. You know, I almost never write jokes that don't have a point. They always have some kind of point. I actually like the joking ones more than the serious ones. A lot of people, I think, like the serious ones. It's like, oh, you know, I don't know. People feel if you're going to write about money, you have to be serious, and I feel the other way. I really take it the other way. I believe I have more confidence in the joking ones, if they have a point, not if they're just silly for no purpose. But if they have a point, I have more confidence in those than I do the serious ones. The serious ones tend to strike me as they're always a little too puffed up. So I like those. Those are my favorite when I write them, when I'm in that mood. Yeah, you can't force it. You just have to go with what you're in. And so anyway, I wrote a silly one. I can't quote it. I don't have it in front of me. But it was like, it started out saying, "The bankers make a lot more money than you and me. They're smelly, and they dress funny." You know, so I said, I'm okay with all that. You know, in other words, the bankers are clearly bad people. You know, they're bad people, you know. But then I swung it around and said, "But I don't really think they caused the stock crash. You know, I think they're getting a bad, you know." And anyway, I sent that in. I got no response from Philip for, I don't know how long. Is it close to a week, is my recollection. So I was expecting a response the next day, and I didn't get it. You know, he could say yes, he could say no, but he didn't say anything. So I took it as, you know, this idea is dead. And then yesterday he sent me an email saying, "Oh, it's going to go up tomorrow." And I said, "Great, thanks." And then I looked today, and it's up. But he had put a blog post up yesterday on, he's adopted a policy on blog posts at Weekonomics, at the Weekonomics blog. And the policy, it didn't say anything about me, but reading between the lines, I take it that he had a negative feeling about the blog. I don't know that as a fact, but the policy was, I run guest blog posts under different circumstances. One is I love it. Two is I really hate it. I just want people to see it, you know. And I said, that's an unusual policy. Now, I want to say, this is why I think this is a positive. Let's just assume that Philip hated my blog post. Hates it. You know, maybe he doesn't like it that I said bankers dress funny. You know, maybe he's a little sensitive point. Maybe, I'm kidding, Philip. Maybe, you know, maybe he thinks it's too silly. Maybe he thinks I should be more substantive. Or maybe he doesn't agree. The conclusion of the blog post is that it's not the bankers who did this to us. We did it to ourselves. Because what the bankers did is they miscalculated risk, and we all did the same thing. Anybody who bought stocks from 1995 through 2008 miscalculated risk. So who's to blame? And I concluded with that. And, you know, that could explain some negative emotion. So let's just assume. I don't know this to be true. It could be David loved the blog. I don't know. But let's just say he didn't like it. I'm not David. Philip. Let's just say he hated it for purposes of discussion. If that's true, then I respect him more if he hates it than if he loved it. If he loved it, it's easy to run the guest blog. You know, you say, I loved it. Of course I'll run it. If you hated it, but some part of you caused you to run it anyway, that is admirable. It means you're open-minded. It means, you know, you're willing to give other people a chance to speak. So if that's true, and I don't know for sure, but I think 60% chance that's so. If that's true, then I admire Philip for running that. And he's not the only one who's done it. There was another guy that I admired, did the same thing, Oblivious Investor. His name was Mike, and his whole blog is about passive investing, advocating it. And, you know, I said, do you want to run a guest blog saying passive investing is a disaster? He said, a guest blog saying that everything I say at my blog is totally wrong? How could I resist? And I thought that was great. That cheered me, because that's the attitude we need to hear. That's what we need to hear. Not that everybody agrees with Rob Bennett. That's stupid. You know, what a boring, stupid world that would be. I'd kill myself. I don't want to live in such a world. You know, I know my stuff. I don't want to hear somebody else doing it. Maybe you can bear it. I couldn't. But a world in which people who believe in passive investing are open-minded enough and warm enough and self-questioning enough to be friends with people who don't agree with them? Yeah. Yeah. That's the future of investing. That's where we're headed. I hope. That's the positive side of me says that. So these two events relate. Don't think that I'm talking about separate things. The title of the podcast about Jonathan Clements, I'm not apologizing. And now the sub-theme is Philip at Weekonomics and Mike at Oblivious Investor, having a bit of a sense of humor about it all. Well, it's the same theme. Please understand. When Jonathan Clements, what we need to see from Jonathan, good guy Jonathan, let's call him, because we all know he's a good guy. What we need to hear from Jonathan is a sense of humor. He's got a sense of humor on other subjects. He's not lacking it. But when it comes to passive investing, it freezes. Oh, it's important. I'm an expert. I got to get everything right. Can't ever admit a mistake. One of them. They're coming to get me. It's one of them. You know, back to the theme music. The monsters are out there. The monsters, the mistake monsters, the apology monsters. That's what Jonathan Clements needs to get over. And Bill Bernstein and Scott Burns and John Bogle and Mel Lindauer and John Graney and on and on and on. That's the problem. Now, no, you know, is there any Drip guy, my friend Drip guy at the Goon Squad, the Goon Central Board will say, oh, Rob, is there anybody else out there saying what you're saying? Well, not precisely. We've got Rob Arnott saying the conventional wisdom of modern investing is largely myth and urban legend. That comes pretty close. But Rob Arnott is not doing, he's not taking it the way I'm taking it. He's focusing on the numbers. Rob Arnott, great stuff. Robert Shiller, great stuff. You know, I've given you the list. You know the list. Lots of people, great stuff. Probably 10% of the investing experts out there today say that passive investing is gibberish. Great stuff. And I couldn't do what I'm doing without them. I've got to be able to point to somebody that agrees with me. You know, I'm in enough trouble as it is with only 10%. I thank God for the 10%. But no, I'm adding a layer to it. What I'm saying is, 7 years ago, when John Walter Russell did the first sensitivity study on the old school retirement studies and found that they get the numbers wildly wrong and they weren't corrected, that was day six of our discussions. Day six. When that happened, I said, I already knew that there was something wrong with passive investing. I couldn't articulate it at the time, but I knew on some level of consciousness, any model of investing that causes retirement numbers to be wildly wrong and sees no need to fix them is a doomed strategy, a horrible strategy, an anti-human strategy, a disease, Disease, not an investing theory, a disease. And what is that disease? It has to do with, you know, human self-importance, human fear. Fear is huge here. Shame over hurting people. Puffed upness, all this dark, smelly stuff. That's the story. I'm a journalist. I'm not an investing expert. I'm a journalist. That's the story. It's a big enough story, God knows, that we got the retirement numbers wrong. That's a huge story, but that's nothing compared to the question of why we got them wrong. The why we got them wrong is that the investing experts don't feel that they can admit mistakes. Well, if you can't admit mistakes, you're doomed. Because if you're human, you're sure enough going to make one sooner or later. And when you make one, you can't fix it. It's going to be multiplied. It's going to be replicated. And sooner or later, you're going to make enough big mistakes, you're going to cause the whole economy to crash. And once the economy goes over a cliff, you know, all the good stuff you did doesn't count for much, does it? So that's the side of the story that I have elected to focus on. That's where I feel I can make a contribution, because I'm not going to keep up with Rob Arnott in terms of generating tables and all this stuff. No way. You know, I mean, that's preposterous. Even the idea that I would do such a thing is so ridiculous. I have no skills to do that. But am I a little more able to point to some of the emotional issues than, say, Rob Arnott or Bill Bernstein or Jonathan Clements? I think so. And I think it would be fair to say the evidence of the last 7 years certainly indicates that to be the case. So what we need is a situation where all these people are working together. Jonathan Clements and Rob Arnott and Robert Shiller and John Bogle and Mel Lindauer and John Graney and Rob Bennett and John Walter Russell and on and on and on. They all need to be working together, and they all need to be doing the things they are good at, and they all need to be friends so that they can share with each other. But we can't be friends if some of us can't say that they're capable of making a mistake, Jonathan. I want to be your friend, Jonathan. I want to be your friend. I have another chapter title in my book. Chapter 10 is John Bogle started out as a little boy. Well, Jonathan Clements started out as a little boy. What Jonathan Clements needs to do to start giving better investing advice is he needs to understand the importance of friendship. Now, I'm sure he has many friends. I'm not saying different. But how many friends does he have who thinks he got it wrong when he advocated passive investing? My guess is not too many, not with the attitude he evidences in that column. The idea right there, I'm not apologizing, is the feeling you get from that is don't bother pointing out my errors. I've already concluded I'm right. That's what needs to change. That's the whole ballgame. When that changes, instead of Jonathan, and again, I've said this before, but I don't mean just Jonathan. He's one of thousands. Instead of Jonathan devoting all his mental energies to rationalizing his mistakes and trying to cover them up and defend them, Jonathan's energies will be learning what he got wrong and how to fix it. And then the world changes. Then, of course, first of all, he'll be learning incredible things, and these thousands of people will be learning incredible things, and they will be telling middle-class investors what they're learning. And we will all be regaining confidence in the market, which means we'll regain confidence in our economic system and in our political system. This is what we need to turn it around. You can spend $1 trillion. It's not going to make any difference. Trust has been broken. Properly so. Middle-class investors are right not to trust the market today, because the market is a shambles because, as plainly as I can say it, people like Jonathan Clements can't admit they got it wrong. I'm going to say it again. I think I've said it 5 times. I'll try 6. The conventional wisdom of modern investing is largely myth and urban legend. If there's even a chance that that's true, Jonathan should be writing how he ended up writing 1,000 columns endorsing passive investing. That's the story. And I, as I say, I wrote Jonathan several emails. As I say, he was kind enough to write me a few. But ultimately, he didn't engage in dialogue. You know, he was kind and polite, but he didn't want to say the old school studies were wrong. No way, no how did he want to say that. You know, he said, Oh, he says, they're not the last word. That was what Jonathan said. The old school studies are not the last word in retirement planning. Well, if they're not the last word, how about writing a column about the fact that we've advanced beyond the old school studies, that there's now a new school of safe withdrawal rate research that includes valuations, that doesn't make the errors the old school studies. How about writing about it? How about telling people about it? But of course, you can't do that until you first admit that it was a mistake not to tell them about it in the first place. So it all goes in circles. We need to break this logjam. So I do want to just, I don't mean that, I don't know if that's all preface, but it's, it's preface and it's not. It's sort of a sneak looking forward analysis. But what I really want to get at is, where do we stand in terms of the economy going into a depression? And it's not going to matter, I don't believe, how much we spend on stimulus bills, a sideshow. What's going to matter is whether we restore trust, and that's an emotional question. It's what we need to do is something a lot harder than spending money. We need to be able to admit we got things wrong, and that's hard. Doesn't cost money. Wouldn't cost a penny for Jonathan Clements to write a column. I apologize. But it would have started huge things in motion, because Jonathan Bogle would have felt required to follow up. Jonathan Bogle says, I was wrong. Yeah, that's going to make a difference. It's going to make a difference. It's going to make a lot of people nervous, but a healthy nervous. See, we're all nervous now. We're all anxious now, but now it's a sick sort of anxiety. It's anxiety about something we know. It's like when you know you have a disease and you don't want to go to the doctor and find out. I remember when my dad, this was years ago. My dad died 3 years back, but when he was about 65, he was out shoveling snow and he had a pain in his left arm. And shortness of breath and all. He knew the signs of a heart attack. He suspected, but he didn't want to know. And he didn't go. That was a Saturday morning, and he didn't go to the doctor until Monday afternoon. And my mother would be asking him, "Are you all right? You look sort of white. And he'd say, "Oh, I think I'm all right. But I don't. I don't want to go out. I think I'll just sit here. For another 3 days." He didn't want to know. Now, thank God, he did get to the doctor before. He went to the doctor and they tested him. They said, get in a cab and get to the hospital as fast as you can. You could have another heart attack any second. And look, he had to have bypass surgery. So it wasn't a fun thing. It was devastating. And I remember the night before his surgery, and I'm there in the hospital, and of course your dad, you always look up to him, and your dad is competent in things that you're not in so many ways. And I don't think my dad always did what the doctors told him. I was always a baby, I just remember talking to him before the surgery, and he was scared. It's the first time I'd ever seen that in my dad, and I thought, man, this is bad. My dad is scared. This is it's like mind-blowing. Well, I understand it. Now, I'm a little older now. So, I understand now. But the point is, I understand why he didn't want to acknowledge that he'd had a little heart attack, out when he was shoveling the snow, minor heart attack. I understand why he wanted to deny it. But what I'm saying is that's a sick sort of anxiety. Denial. And it just eats away at you. And the best thing to do is just, the equivalent here in investing is, Jonathan Clements, I believe, the reason he wrote that column is he has a sick feeling in his stomach that he got it wrong in 1,000 columns. But he doesn't want to go to the doctor and find out. So instead of saying, "Doctor, is Rob Arnott right? Can we have a discussion? I want to find out if Rob Arnott is right or I'm right." Instead, he says, "I'm not apologizing." That'll close the issue. That'll work. It's babyish. It's baby behavior. Understandably so. My father was engaging in baby behavior. You know, he didn't tell us. He didn't tell anybody that this had happened all weekend. I talked to my mother on Sunday. He didn't mention it. You know, but it's totally human. I mean, totally understandable. And, of course, I love them, and I love Jonathan. But I'm saying, with all respect and affection, we need to stop the baby behavior, and we need to grow up. And that means admitting that, you know, maybe you got something wrong. It's not going to hurt. Now, did the heart surgery hurt? Yes, 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 it did. It did. I mean, the recovery was, you know, the operation was successful, but the recovery was very hard, very hard. I'd say it took him at least 6 months before he was back to normal, maybe a year, between 6 months and a year before he was back to normal. So that's a hit. I mean, that's a serious hit. But my dad lived another 20 years. Lived another 20 years. If he hadn't gotten that surgery, you know, he would have lost 20 years off his life. So, you know, it hurt. It hurt. That's not a lie. And it's going to hurt when Jonathan said, I believe someday Jonathan will write a column saying, I apologize. I believe, or the equivalent, but I believe. And it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt. But it's going to be the first step toward opening up 20 years of fantastic, amazing columns out of Jonathan Clemens and all the others, you know, as I say. I'm just using them as an example. It's going to be a growth. It's going to be a great growth experience. But you can't get to the growth experience without passing through the hard part. There is no other route. There is no other route. You can't just start writing how investing works, you know, on Tuesday, April 28th, without on Monday, April 27th, acknowledging you got some things wrong. You know, not after you have 1,000 columns in your record. There's some guy, it's at Bogleheads, and, you know, they have quotes sometimes. People that post, they have a quote at the bottom, you know, sort of their motto, I guess. And one guy has a quote about old theories, they aren't retired because people are logically persuaded to give up on them. They vanish when all the people who believed in them get old and die. You know, there's a lot of truth in that. I think there's a lot of truth in that. Basically, I got to wait around until all the people who advocated passive investing get old and die, and then we're home free. But now this is where I tie it back to the economy. You see, what I say that as a joke, that I have to wait till they all die because I can't live that long. But the reality is, what's really going to do it? It appears, I hope this isn't true, but there's a lot of evidence, that the only way we're ever going to get to the part where we can start being honest about stock investing and telling people what really works is to have the U.S. economy go into a depression where we are all sufficiently frightened that it's over. That there is no future. You know, our currency is destroyed. It's not worth a penny anymore. Dollar's not worth a penny. We lose our houses. We lose our jobs. We lose everything. Violence in the streets. You know, global war, global depression. I mean, just as bad as it can get. At that point, Jonathan Clemens isn't going to give a damn anymore. You know, if he has to say the words, I apologize. And at that point, it frees it up. I'm sure you'll be able to post on discussion boards, tell the truth about safe withdrawal rates, and there's not going to be any goons. Because all the goons are going to be, you know, out, you know, digging in the garden, hoping to get some potatoes to come up or something. Is that what it's going to take? You sometimes get that. I mean, you know, if you look at the record of the first 7 years, you got to say there are signs that that's what it's going to take. And is that ever sad? And of course, as a journalist, I believe in the power of words. I understand that people don't often change their minds because of something a journalist writes. But if I didn't believe in the power of words to ever do any good, I wouldn't be in this field. I believe that words can do good. I believe that strongly. I've devoted my life to learning how to arrange words so that they can do good. That's why I do what I do. So I do believe it's possible to persuade a few people and then to have that grow. And if Jonathan said it, you know, Bogle would soon be saying, if Bogle said it, there's going to be hundreds of people saying it, blogs saying it, and it's just going to grow and grow and grow. And as I say, we have to think of all of our efforts should be towards the transition. How do we get from here to there? And I think it might be a little bit too optimistic to hope that Jonathan's going to come out next month with a column saying, I take it back, I do apologize. You see, that's not the way humans work. But I hope that it's not too optimistic to think that maybe in a month or two or six or whatever it takes, he would be able to come out with a column saying, I'm having second thoughts. I read Arnott. I read Rob Arnott tell me that the conventional wisdom of modern investing is largely myth and urban legend, and that got me thinking. And I met him at a conference, and I asked some questions about why he thinks that, and he told me some stuff I never considered before, and now I'm thinking, I still think I'm right, but maybe I shouldn't act so cocksure of myself. Maybe I should ease back a little bit. I hope that that's a realistic scenario. Well, when talking about whether we're going to have a depression or not, this is the question you should be thinking. Not this standard BS about, you know, what's the unemployment rate and how long did it take to recover in the Great Depression and what's the Federal Reserve going to do and have we passed enough stimulus? All that stuff is a sideshow. All that stuff is to take our mind off. That's like my dad. You know, he's scared to death he's got a heart attack, and he doesn't want to leave the house because he knows he doesn't have the strength. And he says, I got to read this important magazine. You know, could you get me this magazine? I got to see this magazine. I heard they're going to have a cover story on the merits of eating broccoli. You know, I got to read that. I've just been thinking about it. I just got to read that, please. You know, it's he's trying to get his mind off of his troubles. He doesn't really care about broccoli that much. And, you know, he's watching a movie, you know. Everybody Loves Raymond, you know. I mean, he doesn't, you know, I got to see Everybody Loves Raymond. Can't call the doctor tonight because I got to see Everybody Loves Raymond. This is a big episode on Everybody Loves Raymond. You know, I can't call the doctor tonight. Maybe tomorrow. I'll see if my schedule permits, but. This is where we are today. We're all playing mind games, pretending that spending $1 trillion is going to help, pretending it's the Federal Reserve, it's the bankers. If we just could find all the bad bankers, that would fix it. It's us. The economists came up with a dumb idea that the market's efficient automatically, magically. We don't have to do anything to make it efficient. That led us to believe we don't need to sell stocks when prices get to insane levels, and that led to the most out-of-control bull market in history, which inevitably led to the biggest stock crash in history, which means that middle-class investors lost more wealth than ever before in history, and in a consumer economy, which is what we have, you take half of the life savings of all middle-class investors away from them through stocks or the housing crash, which is related. It's just a follow-up bubble. And you crush the economy. You crush the economy, you probably cause a global war. And in a nuclear age, that ain't good. Okay? So we're in a pickle. But the signs we need to be looking for are when are we going to start taking things seriously? Yeah, we use words as if we were taking it seriously. We call it crisis, and we spend $1 trillion rather than the last. You know, Bush had all these stimulus programs. That what they were in the billions, and so we said, well, this is bigger. This has got to be trillions. Billions don't work anymore. It's not the amount of money that matters. It's what we. It's whether we have the courage to address the real problems. So, you see, my take in the early days was, I was seeing all these articles pointing out that the efficient market theory is gibberish. And I said, this is what I've been waiting for. Now that we've had this crash, people have been shocked and we're heading in the right direction now. So and this is where I thought Shiller might be wrong. Shiller's saying, you know, Shiller, they asked them, what's your stock allocation? He said, zero. He said, you know, and he's quite right. Historically, whenever we've done this to ourselves, the valuation level goes to 50% lower than where we are. So we still got another big stock crash ahead of us in the next, you know, year, two, three, four, whatever. So Shiller's right, but my point was Shiller might not be right because we've got this global communications network. What if the Jonathan Clementses of the world start, you know, apologizing and it goes all over the internet and we all flip? We all develop a sense of humor, like Oblivious Investor and Weakonomics, and we flip it. We start having this great national debate about how stock investing really works, and we regain confidence, and it doesn't have to be any depression. There's no economic reason why we need to have a depression. We're already at fair value. Why can't that happen? And it can, and it still can happen. But the fact that we've gone 7 months and somebody like Jonathan Clements can't admit he was wrong, and the Money Bloggers Network, you know, banned posting on the cause of the economic crisis, and they banned posting on the Goons, and these signs are not positive. So, you know, as of this moment, I'm feeling that the odds are that Shiller's right. I still don't go along with Shiller's recommendation to have a zero stock. He didn't really recommend that. He said that's what he's doing. He didn't tell others. But I still think that's too extreme. My view is the price of stocks is good enough that I tend to think that the typical investor should be going with something in the nature of a 50% stock allocation. Everybody has different circumstances, so I don't say that applies for everybody. But you know, if you're in sort of if there is such a thing as a typical investor, that's what I don't want to say I recommend it. It just seems that that's right. But I don't believe passive investors. If you believe in passive investing, I personally don't believe you should be invested in stocks at all. I think you're better to get out. Because if you believe in passive, you've already taken a huge hit, and another 50% price drop is going to wipe you out, and emotionally, if not financially, and you're going to end up selling at the bottom, which is the worst thing you can do. So if you're a passive investor, I think you should be at zero. But of course, the passive investors aren't going to listen to anything I say, so it really doesn't make any difference in a practical sense. But the big question is, you know, do I think? And not that it matters what I think, but I'm, you know, in my mind it matters. You know, our way of life is at risk here. If we have a depression, I really think, you know, we survived the first Great Depression. But by a whisker, there was no guarantee we were going to survive it. You know, we're in the mood of thinking the United States is this great power. You know, power, you know, we're the strongest country in the world. Well, we wouldn't be the strongest country in the world if we hadn't recovered from the Great Depression. We wouldn't be here. You know, we might have turned socialist. There were socialist candidates getting votes in those days. And then we might have never developed any of the things we've developed in the years since. All the inventions and all the growth would have never happened. So there's no law that says these things have to continue. We'll decide that. We are the market. We will decide whether we will see future growth or not. And I think if we get serious, hey, the way is clear. The way is clear to better days than we've ever seen. But if we don't get serious, if we don't go to the doctor and get the heart checked, well, if we don't get that bypass, I think we die. Now, I guess the question in my mind is, what are the odds? You know, if you're going to be intellectually honest, you should be willing to put odds on it. And obviously, no one can put precise odds. All we can do is guess. But I will definitely say that I think the odds that we're going to go below a PE 10 of 10, which is what Shiller says. He says he will be invested heavily in stocks if we go to a PE 10 level below 10. We're now at 14. We were at 44 at the peak. Before the crash, we were in the high 20s. And we're now at 14, and that's fair value. And so Shiller's saying we would go well below fair value. And at that point, he'd be heavily in stocks. Well, what are the odds that we're going to go there? I certainly think it's higher than 50%. I would be inclined to say maybe 70%. And the question I'm struggling with, and I don't think I can answer this. I think I'll just throw it out as a question because I can't resolve it. Maybe because I'm a coward. That's what I sort of think. But if it's 70% chance that we're going to go to a PE10 level, I mean, if we're going to go below 10, we may well see a 50% crash. In other words, I think what's going to happen, the most likely scenario is, all of the money we've spent is going to cause an increase. You know, there'll be some temporary effect. So maybe we'll go, we're at 14, maybe we'll go to 18. And then we'll ultimately, in a year or two or three, we'll see another crash of 50%. We'll be back down at 9. And so the question is, what will that 50% crash do? And I think another 50% crash on top of all we've experienced, I think, is going to tip it. The middle-class investor can't take another 50% crash after all he's lost emotionally. And so if I think there's a 70% chance we're going to see a 50% crash, do I also think there's a 70% chance we're going to see an economic depression rather than just a recession? Well, I can't bring myself to say that. I still put the odds of an economic depression at, say, 30%. You know, a little more than the Wall Street Journal guy, but not that much. But I can't square in my head why. Why do I think 70% that we're going to see another price crash and only 30% we're going to see a depression? I think I'm human like everybody else, and I can't say it. But I'm worried that the logic points to a depression. If we, you know, I don't think it's locked in. I don't think it's determined. I think, obviously, we still have time in front of us. And I wouldn't say what we've done already dooms us. By no stretch do I believe that. But I do think time is running through the hourglass, and 7 months have passed. And while there have been lots of positive signs, you know, Rob Arnott has told us the conventional wisdom of modern investing is largely myth and urban legend. Lots of positive signs, scores of them, hundreds maybe. The reality is, April 27th, 2009, you know, honest posting on safe withdrawal rates is still banned at Motley Fool, still banned at Morningstar, still banned at Vanguard Diehards, still banned at Index Universe, still banned at Early Retirement Forum, to a large extent banned at the Money Bloggers Network. And that's not what you want to see. You know, is that all going to be lifted? You know, after we lift the ban, it's still going to take a year to get the word out to everybody, you know, to have this national debate and to think it through. And, you know, it worries me. So I'll just leave it at that. I personally put the odds of a depression at 30%. I personally put the odds of another stock crash at 70%. I can't square the two. I firmly believe that we don't have to go any lower. But I also firmly believe that we won't be able to recover from this just by spending money. It's going to have to be acknowledging what we got wrong about investing. I think that's what it's going to take to get us through this crisis. We got through the crisis in the 30s. We overcame it. But it wasn't easy. And this one's not going to be easy. It's going to be like a six-month recovery. It's going to be like an open-heart surgery. It's going to be hard. And open-heart surgery, I think, for a lot of people, is writing a column that says, I apologize. And so that's where I see things. I'm watching not for changes in the employment or, you know, this sort of thing. I'm looking for the experts and the middle class investors both work together. The experts will tell us the truth if we demand that they do so. They want to hear from us that we want to hear it, and we of course want to hear from them the truth. And so it's circular. But they're afraid of us, and we're too trusting of them. And somebody has to step forward and be a leader. And I think Jonathan Clements at least toyed with the idea. That's the good thing. He toyed with it. He had enough intellectual integrity that he said, I need to write about the apology issue. That's the issue that matters. He didn't get it right in Rob Bennett's opinion, but he put a marker out there. So let's hope maybe somebody reads between the lines and then reads the Arnott column and says, hey, you know, maybe Jonathan does need to. And let's hope that some people besides Weakonomics and who's the other guy? Weakonomics and Oblivious Investor. And another one was a guy, Bad Money Advice. Bad Money Advice. I asked him about a guest blog, and he said no. He said, if I was to run such a guest blog, I'd have to write another blog saying I think you're wrong. But I've been posting at his blog because I thought he showed intellectual integrity in his response. Even though he didn't run the blog, I felt that he was trying to understand. And I've written some comments. And the other day he said, well, I like Rob's comments. I'm like, I don't always agree with Rob, but I'm glad he's here. He's putting forward some good comments. Again, that's the right spirit. We don't need agreement. No, we don't need agreement to get out of this crisis. What we need is to become human again. That when you become human, you've overcome the passive investing disease. When you become warm, when you can have friends that don't believe in passive investing, when you can tell jokes, when you have a sense of humor, that's what we need to see. And we're seeing a little bit of it sprouting up here and there. But we need to see a lot more. I am disappointed that we're not seeing more after 7 months. In two, three months in, I was encouraged. And now I feel like we just sort of were frozen in time. We're not really moving forward. We moved forward in the early months, and now we're just scared. We're scared rabbits. So I'd like to see some more forward movement. That's my take on where things stand. And they're coming to get me. I can see them. It's one of them. They're coming to get me. You take care. I'll talk to you again soon. Thank you.